it.
On air, WICC 600. Online, WICC600.com. Let's stimulate your brain with the Lisa Wexler Show.
Let's talk about that it's Friday, that it's spectacularly beautiful out. I don't know if this fantastic weather will continue, but whatever it is, it's warm and it's not cold and it's green and it's lush. And joining us now is Henrik Taraskiewicz. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Henrik, am I pronouncing that correctly?
You got the anglicized version perfectly, but it's if you go with the native Polish, it's Taraskiewicz, but I don't expect anyone
I can't do that. I can't pretend to do that. I'm sorry, Henrik. Do you speak Polish at home, or do you speak English at home or Polish at home?
English at home. I'm the first generation over here that does it, so.
Oh, that's funny.
Of a black sheep, I guess. I still, I think it was just my mom wanted to talk about me with my father when I was around.
Naturally, every set of parents that has the advantage over their kids, they always like to do that. They always like
Absolutely.
To do it. But Henrik,
Lisa,
I want to.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
You're welcome. I want to tell our audience a little bit about you. You were the executive director of the Woodcock Nature Center in Wilton for 16 years. Your wife Kelly teaches fourth grade at Sandy Hook Elementary. Did she teach during? Did she teach in 2000? Was it 2013 or 14? What did she teach when Newtown happened?
She was taking a break from teaching to raise our children, and right after that happened is when she realized that she needed to go back. They needed support in the school, so she said to them, look, you guys need people, obviously, to fill positions now, so they hired her to do so, because they had a lot of people, frankly, calling in with sent by ulterior motives, shall we say, God or what have you, wanted them to help out, whereas my wife just wanted to help out in her town and make a difference. So they hired her there. And so now, yes,
so she's at the new school.
First grade and fourth grade.
So she's at the new school, yes.
She was in the Monroe School. She started literally the months right afterwards.
I see. Wow.
Yeah.
And you have your own. Yeah. And let's just talk. So, Henrik, you have your own educational consultancy called Reconnect, and you're implementing the curriculum for the Catherine Violet Hubbard Foundation, an animal sanctuary. I've heard amazing things about that animal sanctuary. Where is that sanctuary located?
So that's right here in Newtown, and it's across from the Fairfield Hills campus. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the whole idea of the education program, they want to spread kindness and compassion towards animals and nature, with the idea that it will breed kindness and compassion towards people. And there's actually studies out there that show that that is, in fact, the psychological truth.
You know, it's very common sense, isn't it? I mean, it's like...
Well, that's the thing with all of this these days. You know, it all seems common sense, but we don't do it necessarily.
Yeah, that's a good
point. My place in this whole environmental continuum, if you want to call it that, is I consider myself the bottom rung of the ladder, where I want to re-engage people in the outdoors, in what's in their own backyard, and try to overcome this sort of syndrome that's going on that Richard Love, he coined it nature deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that people of all ages, but especially kids, just aren't going outside anymore. And there's a number of reasons why this is happening. It's the digital age. There's the computer games. There's the computers, all the screen time. There's environmental fear that's going on, fear of ticks, especially here in Connecticut, fear of sunburns.
There's so many fears. And you know where it began with, Henrik? I'm going to tell you, because I'm older than you.
Okay.
And I know exactly when it began. I'm going to tell you exactly when it began. It began after 9/11. Because there was a generation. So I moved here in 89. My little one was two. My youngest one wasn't going to be born for another 4 years. And I threw them outside, right? Because I grew up being thrown outside. And I grew up in a much more urbanized suburban environment. I grew up on little cookie cutter postage stamp kind of houses and little lawns.
I'm a Jersey boy originally, so I'm with you.
Okay, exactly. But we were thrown out on the pavement. In a way, it was a good way, because we had a lot more kids on the street. And we played every single night until the sun went down, you know, certainly in the spring, summer, and fall.
Or a parent yelled dinner time, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And my parents thought nothing. And it was sort of understood in the neighborhood that the older kids would look out for the younger kids, which they sort of did, particularly the boys looking out for the younger girls. We sort of felt protected that way. We were out on our bikes all the time. We were climbing trees all the time, literally climbing trees on our bikes all the time.
Yeah.
And that's what we did, and our parents weren't afraid. Now, I came to Westport in 1989, and I was lucky because my next-door neighbors grew up like me, and we threw our kids outside, and we would say, dinner, whose house do you want to eat at tonight? And that's the way my son got to grow up. My daughter, a little bit less. She came 6 years later. She was born in 93. But by 2001, with what happened at 9/11, and the younger mothers that were coming into the neighborhood, it was a very different attitude. It was fear. And it was, you know, a lot of, frankly, bicycle helmets. Not that I'm against bicycle helmets, but it was knee pads and elbow pads and helmets. And it was, you know, I need to go trick-or-treating with you in Halloween. Like, my parents were like, get out and go trick-or-treating. And if you're not old enough to trick-or-treat because you're not old enough to go out alone and you don't have an older brother or sister, then you're not trick-or-treating, but I'm not going with you. You know what I mean? It's a totally different hovering. It's just totally different, Henrik. It's a totally different attitude about needing to always be there with their children every minute of the day, scheduling play dates instead of a kid just saying, hey, you want to come outside and play? They had a call first. I mean, it's just like a whole different thing.
Well, you're describing the helicopter parent mentality right now, and that is one of the other reasons that this sort of nature deficit exists with kids. And the problem is with this is that it's really it goes against really what's good for the child, not just mentally and emotionally, but actually physically with their health. There's all these studies that are suggesting that kids have to be in green spaces, not just because we know it's the right thing for them, but because they actually physically need this. I mean, we've evolved to be outdoors. We evolved with these things that are outdoors, all these microbes and bacteria. There's a bacteria in the soil that does the same thing as Zoloft. It's a natural antidepressant. We're supposed to have these things as part of our upbringing and part of our bodies. There's a Swedish study even that showed that if people don't get 20 minutes of sunlight, now everyone's afraid of sunlight because of melanoma, and I get that, but they're saying you have to get 20 minutes of sunlight a day or you have the same morbidity rate as a person who smokes a pack of cigarettes a day.
Is that right?
Yeah, do you want your kids smoking a pack of cigarettes a day? No. So you got to build up their tolerance. You don't just go throw them out in the sun. And that's the other part of this. I'm not one of those people. Look, it is what it is right now. I'm not going to say it was so much better when I was a kid, even though it was.
It was.
I'm not going to say that to them. But what I am going to say is, look, this is if I can't beat them, I'm going to join them. So what I do is I try to figure out ways to get parents to understand the risks of not going outside versus the risks of keeping them indoors and things like that. Is Lyme disease a real thing to be concerned about? Of course it is. But it shouldn't preclude children from being outdoors. You just need to be smart about it. So
you throw them in a shower and you take their clothing and you put it in the dryer for 20 minutes because it kills any possible tick. I mean, that's a way to behave, taking a reasonable approach to still letting your kid play outside.
See, there's this idea, and I'm not sure if it has to do with how litigious our society is these days, but there's this idea that you have to have zero risk or you're a bad parent. You put them at risk if you have anything like that. Well, but people don't think. You go out in the car, you're taking a risk every time you pull out of your driveway.
So you can't live
that way. Life is risk, and these kids need to understand risk assessment for their own lives so that they can grow up with that ability. Risk assessment's a very important thing that children need to have as part of their lives, and that involves climbing a tree, doing something stupid, jumping your bike over the curb. You know, a couple of hits and bruises and scrapes is good for you. At least that's what our doctor always told us. So, you know, the way I like to try to overcome some of this, and again, can't beat them, join them. There are some wonderful apps on the phones that if the kids are using this technology, well, then let me use it as a lure to bring them back outdoors.
Okay, so give me an example. We're chatting with Henrik Taraskiewicz. So tell me, give me an example of if you do have a young person, and tell me what you think is an age-appropriate time for your kid to be going out and exploring nature on their own or with a friend, you know, in their own backyard or on their street. You know, tell me what, how, yeah, go ahead.
Well, look, obviously for each parent and individual, depending on where you live, and also the times of where what we're living with right now with the COVID pandemic and what have you, you've got to do this intelligently. So obviously you're not going to send that pack of kids out right now like we used to do, because then they have to social distance and this and that. So, but one of the silver linings of this pandemic has been people rediscovering their own backyards or their own green spaces next to them, because they've been so forced to be cooped up that now people want to go outside again. So I've actually seen almost this one silver lining in my line of work and what I do. And so one of the things that I've been telling parents to do that you can do on your own is there are these wonderful citizen science projects and apps on the phones. One of them, the number one as far as I'm concerned, is a total game changer, is called iNaturalist. And okay, you can go online to iNaturalist.org. It's all free. The code is free. It's open source. It was done by these naturalists in California with the California Academy of Sciences. It is truly amazing. And what this app does is it allows you to take a picture of any living thing. It could be plant, insect, animal. It could be signs of an animal. It could be animal scat or footprints. And you take a picture of it. It uploads it automatically to this global database of millions and millions of user pictures. And it will figure out, the computer will match it up and try to figure out what you have. So you basically have a naturalist at your disposal. And the great thing about this is once that picture gets uploaded, other naturalists and people in the profession will go on and they will either confirm what you found or they'll tell you, oh, it's actually this. And once everyone agrees to it, it becomes what's called research grade. So your data, your picture that you took in your backyard gets uploaded to this global diversity database, and scientists and researchers and conservationists, they actually use it to help protect the environment. So you can just go out in your backyard and actually make a difference just by having fun, taking pictures and seeing what you have.
That is so cool. So in other words, if I'm walking around, and this happens almost all the time, and I want to know the name of something, right? Like the other day I saw a plant and it was pink, and it almost looked like a forsythia in pink, even though we know the forsythia has already bloomed and gone. But I didn't know what it was. You're saying if I have this app, iNaturalist app, and I take a picture, that within seconds, it's going to tell me what it is, and I'm going to learn something.
That's right. Or it's going to give you its best guess. Yes.
Best guess.
And
okay,
the great thing is that picture, like I said, it automatically helps out science. So they're crowdsourcing all of this biodiversity or different living things around us. It's truly incredible. But I'll tell you what's even better, because, you know, I work with kids mostly.
Yeah.
They made another app because everyone was calling for it for the kids, called Seek. Now, iNaturalist made this sort of app version of their thing called Seek. And the Seek thing, do you remember, Lisa, did you know about the whole Pokemon thing, the virtual Pokemon thing?
Yes, of course. Who didn't know about that? But how do you spell Seek? Can you explain it? Henry, can you tell me how you spell that?
Seek, S-E-E-K.
Seek is S as in, got it.
S in front of it.
Okay. Okay,
like you're going to seek out this nature, yes.
Okay.
And so what happens with this one, they use something called augmented reality. And it takes that massive database and puts it live onto your phone camera. So you can just point your camera at things that are around you, and it will start identifying anything that the camera sees in real time.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And what's great about it is it's like that Pokemon game where you're finding stuff out there. Except you're finding something real that makes a difference, and it's fun, and it's tangible because it's not virtual. It's there in front of you. It's in your backyard or on a hike or on a walk or on the side of a building like a lichen. It's truly incredible what this thing does. Plus, it kind of keeps track of what you're doing in the sense that if you find 3 plants, you get a bronze badge. So you get rewarded. You find 10 plants, you get a silver badge. It levels you up, and you're constantly trying to find more things in different animal groups and kingdoms to try to up your standing a little bit. It gamifies it, is really what it does.
It's pretty fantastic. Now, you write in your bio that as part of someone who is writing the curriculum for the Catherine Violet Hubbard Foundation Animal Sanctuary, that you want to be a national model for experiential next generation science standard learning to lead to an ethic of kindness and caring for the natural world. So, Henrik, is part of satisfying curiosity and learning and understanding, does that sort of go hand in hand with, you know, this kindness, or is the kindness something a little less subtle? Like, how do you do that? How do you do that?
So the idea is, with this separation of children and nature, is to reintroduce them to the nature that's around them. The idea being that if they understand it, or at least, I mean, and what's probably going to happen is they're going to get excited by it. Mm-hmm. So at most get really excited by it, at least understand it. Well, understanding breeds kindness and caring. And so next time they make a decision to throw out a plastic bottle or use a water bottle or something like that, maybe they'll think, oh, wait a minute, there is a connection here to these wonderful things that I now know about outdoors. I'll make a better choice in my life. And so that's kind of how this thing works, is you can introduce them to these concepts and these things, make them care about it, and if they care about it, they'll do something about it. But the fact is if they don't even know about it, well, why would they have any impetus to protect it?
What's at the animal sanctuary? Is it all about allowing the deer and the chipmunks and all the other animals that are around to just know that they have a safe place to be? Or do you introduce other species there that, like, you know, let's say an elephant or something that would need a sanctuary? I would like to see sanctuaries. Go ahead, yeah.
No exotic animals. There's a push these days for native species.
Okay.
You know, when things evolve together, they benefit each other. And this is one of the problems, is there's so many invasive species in our environment. These systems that have evolved together and work together, these ecosystems, they're breaking down, and it's causing issues. That's why you see disappearing pollinators and things of that nature. So we educate about those pollinators, for instance, and what you can do, subtle differences that you can make in your yard, not using chemicals, planting native milkweeds and pollinator-supporting flowers and things like that, leaving sections of your lawn unmowed except for once a year, creating biodiversity in your own yard. If everybody did that, who had a yard, well, it would make a massive, massive difference, wouldn't it?
So do you have bears that are allowed in your sanctuary? Do you have fences? Is your sanctuary fenced off, or is it part of the natural landscape around it for animals to wander in and out?
Natural landscape, in and out, absolutely, except for the gardens. We do have gardens there that are part of the Real Food Share program.
Okay.
So those, we do keep them out of those gardens.
Right, otherwise we'd have nothing to eat. I know, it's true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Look, I mean, so much of this is balancing how you can be good as opposed to above.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Henrik, for being on the show. Are you doing anything this summer for kids? Is there anything, a summer camp or program that's actually going to be open and not virtual that parents, grandparents may want to know about?
Oh, absolutely. Here in Newtown, my wife, Mrs. T, and I are running an outdoor exploration camp as part of the Newtown Continuing Education Program, which it can be found on there. It's going to be take place at the Sandy Hook School. The nature area behind the school is going to be our playground. It's going to be our lab. It's going to be our exploration area, and it's gorgeous. There's barred owls that live back there and all kinds of wonderful creatures that we can go and explore. So that's what we're going to be running for 4 weeks starting July 6th, and that's for kids who have just finished first up to just finished fourth grade.
Beautiful. Thank you, Henrik. So nice to have you on the show. I love your enthusiasm and your passion, and it's wonderful for the rest of us that you're devoting your life to making nature more accessible and all of that for all of us. So thank you very much.
Lisa, thank you so much for the opportunity, allowing me to ramble on about
it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Thank you very much. Henrik Taraskiewicz on the Lisa Wexler Show today. Thank you very much. We'll be
thank
right
you.
Back.